out to everyone. Welcome to another insightful and thought-provoking segment of Live from D-Block, where we keep it real and we keep it relevant. I'm your host, Ezekiel Thomas, and as always, I'm honored for the privilege of your time. I want to welcome you back to our ongoing conversation on healing for the criminal mind. And this has been a very interesting series that has taken us on many levels of observation and discussion, all of which have been relevant to the overall process of criminal rehabilitation. And a part of what I've sought to do through my commentaries has been to be qualitative, and not just quantitative in my approach, to not just focus so much on the pathology of criminal thinking, which tells you what things are, but also on the intricate emotional dynamics behind the criminal thought process that tells you why things are. And I'm not a Harvard professor. I'm not a behavioral scientist from Yale. My position is not informed by trained clinical assumptions, but rather by personal failures born from a once troubled and self-defeated life. I'm speaking from the subjective perspective of one who has faced the beast within and has been triumphant. So this is primarily what qualifies me. My mission here is to facilitate healing in the life of those whose hearts and minds have become imprisoned by failed life beliefs. But we can't fix what we don't understand, which is why I'm so passionate and so dedicated to helping other people understand the very nature and nuances of the criminal mind and the criminal thought process that's often poisoned by thinking errors and false life assumptions. Assumptions that, I might add, that can become ingrained personality traits and later produce a dysfunctional and very troubled human being. So in our last segment, we explored two components of this mentality: the unconscious habit of self-betrayal and the people's wound, both of which we trace back to a failed life narrative, a life narrative that was often rooted in past trauma, a life narrative that was associated in some way with lifelong tragedy, and a life narrative that was characterized by pessimism, sadness, and bitterness. And that segment that we shared together attempted to engage the listener with these insights that could begin a process, hopefully, in the mind of the person, of the criminal, of the person who is suffering from these debilitating states of sadness and self-defeated thinking, with principles that would help them rethink the way that they think. Now, today's segment is more about emotional intelligence. It's more about being more aware of what we feel and why we feel it. Let me say something to you. Many people who suffer from debilitating sadness are unfortunately also emotionally illiterate people. Sometimes the degree of sadness in the life of a person is actually proportionate to the very degree of ignorance that that person has about the very nature of their feelings. So today, I want to talk about emotional literacy as a necessary component to criminal redemption and healing. But before we talk about what our emotions mean to our life and the quality of our life outlook, we need to first talk about emotions in the general sense, at the very basic and most rudimentary level, so as to set the foundation for a more thorough analysis that will naturally progress as our series continues. Now, as someone who has spent a lot of my incarcerated years trapped in a vicious emotional cycle of self-defeated thinking, I can attest that most people who suffer from this condition are absolutely ignorant about what is required to free and liberate themselves from it. For the criminal who is seeking to free himself or herself from this complex array of criminal impulses that informs that thought process which leads to self-destructive behavior, it can be almost as if trying to free themselves from a maze. It's almost impossible because you don't know where to start and you don't know what to start with. The best place, in my opinion, however, is to start from within. Because we can live a lot of places on Earth. We can live in Tahiti, in the Polynesian Islands. We can live in Alaska. We can live in the Middle East. But that's not mandatory. The one place that's mandatory for us to live is within ourselves. The inner residence is the one place that none of us can avoid. Yet, it is the one place that many of us, from a criminal standpoint, seek to abandon. And this is because of the turmoil that sometimes exists and the emotional life of that person, a turmoil that lays ambush to mental peace, a turmoil that makes balanced thinking impossible. So as long as our emotions have been conditioned to attack our mind and our self-esteem like vicious dogs, then we will never experience psychological comfort. We would never be comfortable within our own skin, and we will always feel out of place within. I believe that emotional wellness represents a significant part of our overall thinking that affects our sanity and our stability in the long run. But what are emotions? Well, just as thinking helps us determine what things are, emotions help us determine how things should matter. Emotions help give us meaning to things that we experience. It helps link our feelings to certain memories and certain circumstances in our life. It helps us interpret our experiences by helping us decide how to ascribe value to those experiences. So our emotions tell us what things are, and it tells us if things are friend, if things are foe, if things can be trusted, if things are evil, if things are valuable, or if things are without value. Emotions help us recognize and distinguish between things that we are aware of. They help us ascribe feelings to things simply by giving them a grade in our life so we'll be able to set a priority standard on those things. And our emotions, a lot of times, are instructed by our beliefs. In order to change our emotional state, that sometimes is ruled by negative beliefs, then we must first change our basic life beliefs. Now, although we are unable to change the stimuli or the situations that have accompanied those experiences in our past, we can nevertheless change the way we interpret those experiences and what we get from them. So today I want to talk about 7 basic steps to healing our emotional life. And this is going to set the foundation for our future podcast as we delve more into this subject. The first thing that we can do to establish a balanced emotional life is to define emotions correctly, as we've already done, right? Next, we can identify the role and the purpose of emotions in our life. And to some degree, we've done that. We've said that emotions help us distinguish what things are and if those things should be considered valuable or a priority. Now, the third step is that we should remove beliefs and assumptions from our thinking that can lead us to wrongly interpret our experiences and poison our emotional life. Fourth, we can change our view of ourselves because many negative emotions usually revolve around a negative self-concept. Fifth, we can subordinate our emotions to principles that teach us to rely our decisions more on fact than on personal opinion. Sixth, we can improve our self-vision that no longer sees the self relational to acceptance from others, and therefore our emotions being linked and tied in to what other people think of us or how other people validate our self-worth. And seventh, this is a very important principle. We can improve our basic self-talk, the way that we communicate with ourselves, the things that we say to ourselves. We can communicate with ourselves on the basis of a self-worth that's indestructible and that's not conditional to social norms or circumstances. This lays the foundation for a healthy, balanced emotional life. A poisoned emotional life is usually in some way connected to the criminal thought process. Healing the criminal thought process will require that we heal the emotional life that often drives it. Well, it's time to go. But before I go, I want you to stay focused. I want you to stay positive. And I want you to stay healed.